Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
This week we've been talking about K through 12 education. Yesterday we heard from the Teacher of the Year, and today our focus is on inequality. There's a significant achievement gap between rich and poor students, as well as between Black and Latino students and white students. Joining us to discuss is Daniel Lozen, director of the Center for Civil Rights Remedies, an initiative at the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
And how much inequality exists right now in the public schools in this country?
Well, of course, that depends on how you measure inequality. If you're looking at who has access to effective teachers, you see pretty profound differences along lines of race and class. If you look at who's being kicked out of school for even minor offenses of the school discipline code, you see really shockingly disparate rates for Black students, girls and boys, but also students with disabilities, English learners, and other subgroups. If you're looking at where schools are getting adequate resources, you find that we still have entrenched patterns of racial and socioeconomic isolation, especially in urban areas, and they are oftentimes underfunded. And we even have situations like in Ohio where the state Supreme Court said their distribution of school finance and resources is unconstitutional, yet the state legislature has failed to remedy the situation.
So still a lot of problems exist, but which way are the trend lines going? Are things getting more unequal or more equal?
Well, in terms of patterns of segregation and racial isolation, they're actually getting worse. In terms of school discipline, there's been a greater awareness that kicking kids out of school is actually counterproductive. If we're looking at who has access to effective teachers, I don't have the historical data, but it's still a very, very entrenched pattern. And these things are oftentimes connected. You see the access to teacher issue more pronounced in racially isolated districts, as well as higher suspension rates. So it's not like these are isolated problems.
Well, you've mentioned suspension rates several times. Let's talk about that specifically. What are you talking about there, and why is that so critical in terms of the inequality question?
So what we're finding from research is that getting suspended out of school is actually one of the leading predictors of whether students drop out of school eventually. It also obviously denies access to instruction. And we know from research on chronic absenteeism, for example, that even missing 3 days of school in 1 year at the fourth grade, after controlling for other factors, predicted a lower reading level by a full grade level. So it's really important in terms of closing the achievement gap is related to closing the discipline gap, because we are seeing schools where 25%, 30%, 40% of African-American youth, of students with disabilities, even in preschools, we're seeing huge disparities. Even the numbers are obviously lower, but we're seeing really large racial disparities. And it also reflects a problem in terms of inequality that was actually brought up in one of the presidential debates around policing, which is this concept of implicit bias. So that's oftentimes confused with intentional discrimination. Implicit bias is really the way stereotypes infect our perceptions and judgments about what we're seeing and how to respond to it. And so there was a recent study by Yale where they looked at implicit bias among preschool teachers, Black and white, and found that when they were prompted to look for possible misbehavior, even though what they were looking at was actually students who are all well-behaved, most of the time the eyes went to the Black boys, Black preschool boys. So it starts early, but you can see how that could contribute to some of the problems that we're seeing.
And the solution would be what, just to not suspend kids? Because I imagine if you were to go to these individual schools and say, on an individual basis, did this person deserve to be suspended? Well, here's what they did. Here's why we suspended them.
Oftentimes, there's this dichotomy. Is it chaos on the one hand or kicking kids out of school on the other? In fact, I have a book that is a compilation of researchers' findings from around the country about what works instead. And it really shows that there's a whole range of things that you can do in terms of teaching appropriate behavior, but also training and supporting teachers to find more effective ways to engage students. And these also have the impact of reducing the racial disparities. So there's a lot that folks can do. I was a teacher for over 10 years. And, you know, my first year, I was that teacher that was kicking kids out right and left, sending them to the principal's office. But I also received the kind of training that is outlined in the research, where I learned to be a better educator, better classroom manager, but also more effective in delivering instruction. And behavioral problems went down a lot. And then those that remained, I had the tools to address them much more successfully.
What about the economic part of this, that people that live in richer neighborhoods are paying more property taxes, they have more money going into the schools, and people that live in poorer neighborhoods don't? Is there any way to fix that problem?
Well, one suggestion has been to not make school resources based on property taxes. The only caution there is that in many of the wealthier and whiter suburbs, there's actually adequate resources. So we don't want to, by level of the playing field, also lower the level of resources. So we would have to have a strong commitment to providing an adequate resources for children wherever they're located. But I also think it's important to connect this with housing. There's a legacy of housing discrimination and redlining and other barriers to have integrated communities. And we oftentimes, when we talk about equity in education, we leave diversity off the table when it's really centrally important for making the kinds of big structural changes that are going to be needed to get to a real fair and just system of public education in the United States.
Just last month, a court in Connecticut ruled that that state's method of funding public schools was unconstitutional and that the state was defaulting on its constitutional duty to provide an adequate education to all children because there are such disparities between wealthy and poor school districts. When you heard that, did you think, oh, Connecticut's really doing a bad job? Or, you know, if any court in any state looked at what's going on, they'd probably find a similar thing.
I think they would find a similar thing in most states. What's interesting about Connecticut is that there is a standing desegregation order that has been partially but not fully implemented. So, for example, students in Hartford, there are magnet schools that bring white students from the suburbs into Hartford, but there's also a choice program where students there can go to school in the suburbs. And that's been really quite successful. But it really goes to what is the remedy? Unfortunately, the judge in Connecticut wasn't able to spell out any specific remedies. But at the bottom line is what he was saying is really important, that we all have a responsibility to educate all children as if they are our own children. Until we get to that kind of approach to these problems, I think we're going to see a lot of the inequities persist.
And what's at stake? How much of a difference does it make for a student that goes through the most high-end schools, public schools, but rich public schools at the end of their time in those public schools versus a student that's going to some of the worst schools in the country?
Well, the differences are quite profound when we've looked at things like the cost of not graduating, and there's huge disparities by race where, you know, African-American and Latino students are oftentimes graduating around 60% of their entering, you know, freshman high school class, and it's much closer to 90% nationally for most other subgroups. And what that means in terms of our economy is that we don't have the kinds of workforce where in upwardly mobile kinds of jobs that require the kind of critical thinking or technical background or mathematical or science skills to be successful. And so there's a huge drain on our economy. Our failure to educate all students also contributes to our mass incarceration. You know, we put more people behind bars than any other country by far.
Right.
And part of the problem is, you know, a long time ago, the Supreme Court said there is no federal, they didn't recognize in the Constitution a federal right to an education. And many states do have a right to an education, but when it comes down to how it's interpreted, unfortunately, not enough states have been, like in Connecticut, the Supreme Courts in many states have not said we're not meeting our obligation to students.
these days, so many people decide that they're not even going to go with the public schools. Instead,
right.
they are going to send their kids to private schools. How much damage does that do to the public schools?
Well, that's a difficult question because, you know, you can't say to parents, you have to put your children in a public school system. But what I think it really is a reflection of is when we fail to provide an adequate education to all kids, those with the means will make sure their kids get an adequate education.
And does that hurt the public schools?
So it absolutely does hurt the public schools, just the way there's concerns about charter schools creaming. You know, the idea that the folks with the most resources are pulling their children out, it's not necessarily so much about their children, but it really speaks to the lack of political will in terms of improving public schools. Unfortunately, I think that's short-sighted. Even the wealthiest who might put their child in a private school aren't realizing the public good, the benefit to all of us to having a well-educated population and what that means to businesses, but also to it goes to the fabric of our democracy.
That's Daniel Lozen, director of the Center for Civil Rights Remedies, an initiative at the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.